This is a light. Huh, Pinocchio?
Yeah. It sure is.
Ah, you smoke like me grandmother. Come on. Take a big drag. Like this.
Okay, Lampy.
Some fun, huh, kid?
Actually, in that particular instance, Pinocchio and his friend are smoking cigars, not cigarettes. We're going to be talking about, mainly, I think, cigarette smoking in movies today. But first, I have to make a soliloquy. I have to perform a soliloquy? What do you do with soliloquies? I have to say a few things. Well, one of them is, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, not once. There's a small group of us who fall into that category, but at no point was I tempted to try it. Both of my parents were very heavy smokers. I hated it. I hated the sight of full ashtrays around the house. I just loathed every minute of that part of my childhood and adolescence. And then I went from college, where fortunately very few people smoked in my immediate circle of friends, to the newspaper business, where in the 1970s, as you might imagine, a newspaper newsroom was having some kind of, you know, meteorological inversion. I mean, there was just like this huge, dense cloud of smoke there all day, which I hated. And you'd go out for lunch with your fellow reporters and they'd smoke there, or went out for a beer or they'd want to smoke. You couldn't get away from it. And I lived through, while in the newspaper business, the period where ultimately even newspaper newsrooms decided to get rid of smoking. And I can't tell you how many of my fellow reporters, you know, regarded that as torture and would complain directly to me about what was being done to them. And I would look at them and say, really, you feel uncomfortable now, do you? Because you can't smoke. Now, that's so interesting. Anyway, despite all of that, I'm really kind of fascinated by people smoking in movies and on television. And I mean, I look for it, I watch it, I find it a very interesting way of developing character and signaling emotional states and ways in which actors can kind of ply their craft using this extra little prop that they've got that's such an incredibly intimate prop that's very close to their faces. So we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk about it with some great guests. Obviously, I am not pro-smoking, but it does really interest me. I should also say that there are instances where it gets to be too much. Matthew McConaughey in True Detective, after a while, you really can't stand to watch it anymore. Sarah Paulson as Marsha Clark in the OJ thing, after a while, it's just like, find some other thing to do with yourself. But most of the time, I think it's really interesting, and I want to find out why I think it's very interesting. So joining us is David Edelstein, America's greatest living film critic for New York Magazine, CBS Sunday Morning, and of course, Fresh Air. Also joining us is Richard Klein, professor emeritus of French literature, what else, at Cornell, and the author of Cigarettes Are Sublime, which celebrates its 25th anniversary as a book this year. I'm going to start out with you, David. I mean, we're going to get, as we go along here, to the whole question of whether this should be a much more restricted on-screen activity. But one of the occasions for having this conversation is the upcoming merger of Disney and Fox. Disney does not permit smoking in its movies. There are a whole bunch of Fox products in which people do smoke. I don't know. What does smoking mean to you when you see it in movies that you like?
Well, tobacco's image in some ways comes from the drug itself. Mm-hmm. If it works for you, I guess it really can be pretty wonderful. It makes you simultaneously more alert and more relaxed and even keeled. And as you alluded to earlier, it's easier to look contemplative when you're smoking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can make very coarse, shallow actors look thoughtful and cool. Most people who knew Bogart thought he was a jerk, a vulgar, macho, chain-smoking drunk. But, you know, give him a cigarette on screen, and there were existentialists, you know. Mm-hmm. He looked like Jean-Paul Sartre, you know. And so cigarettes do have that effect, and I think it's a it can be a useful tool for a an artist, and I would never want to restrict an artist's vocabulary. And so I'm all in favor for it if you give it an R rating, if automatically, when it appears on screen, kids cannot immediately be allowed to see it, as Disney has now said. If it is specifically shown in a little warning, and preferably if you also see some sign that it leads to it leads nowhere but to emphysema and lung cancer and heart disease, and like any other poison, I wouldn't mind if there were a little skull and crossbone that appeared in the corner of the screen whenever somebody did it. So I'm all for artistic freedom, but I'm also for showing the consequences of an extremely influential behavior that has for decades, if not a century, you know, killed so many people, or at least, you know, led them like the Pied Piper or the Pied Smoker to their deaths.
So let me just play around with that a little bit with you. Okay, let's say the classic scene in Bringing Up Baby, where Katharine Hepburn suddenly picks up a cigarette in order to shift into this fake character, right? She's in this jail, and she suddenly is, for the purposes of deceiving somebody else and to the annoyance of Gregory Peck, no, Cary Grant, excuse me, she's going to pretend that she's like this tough lady. Do you think, I mean, is that an R rating right there? I mean, it's got a kind of a comic purpose within the plot.
Cigarettes meant something very, very different back then. You know, we didn't have this. We knew they were deadly, but I wasn't alive. But the Surgeon General's report hadn't come out yet. As you said, you know, newsrooms were, it meant something very, very different. Ronald Reagan was selling them on TV in the 60s. The 50s and 60s. So, I don't want to go back and erase. I don't want to do a George Lucas and squeegee out the computer, CGI squeegee out the cigarettes. Nowadays, I would say that, you know, we might look for a different way for her to project sophistication. I would like to see cigarettes associated with stupidity and vulgarity and ill health, frankly. And, you know, if she wanted to demonstrate that she was an idiot, that she was a really, you know, coarse, garish, vulgar person who, you know, was using all her disposable income on little cancer sticks, if you wanted to show that, that's fine. Give it an R rating. And, you know, I would have liked to have, you know, there are cases where it's a historical picture. You know, there's the there was the famous Edward R. Murrow film that George Clooney directed, in which everybody smoked. It would have been nice if there had been a little that was very much part of Murrow's persona. It would have been nice if there were a little scrawl at the end that said, you know, he died of emphysema and lung cancer, and so did probably everyone else on screen. But it was very expressive. Mm. It was hugely expressive, you know, to see all those people smoking.
Yeah, it's not just that movie though. It's Mad Men. It's I mean, these aren't movies, but Boardwalk Empire, The Hour. Do you really think that people? I don't know. You like movies where people saw each other.
And they get they're rated R. Yeah. And first of all, I don't really like them. No. I did come up with the term torture porn myself to suggest my ambivalence towards them. So if you want to use them, and Mad Men is kind of a special case. When you look at a historical era, I think that, you know, the idea of these people having bars in their offices and smoking the way they do was hugely evocative. So it's not an easy question. At the same time, I'm delighted. I've seen a lot of movies, PG-13 movies, not by Disney, but by other studios, that kids can see and are very influenced by, in which characters look cool when they smoke. And even the Billie Jean King movie, you know, and historically it's true that Virginia Slims did bankroll that, you know, the first professional women's tennis tour because they saw it as a way of promoting their brand. But I thought the movie presented it in a much more positive light than it deserved to be. I mean, any tennis player who chain smokes Virginia Slims is not going to be much good on the court after a few years.
Well, Well, I mean, there certainly are risks associated with smoking, but there have been.
There certainly are risks associated with smoking.
Well, yeah, no, but I was going to I was going to say there are also a lot of athletes who have managed to go through their whole careers while being smokers.
Right. Well, then talk to them when they're 70.
Right, and it's certainly
if
you know
they get to 70.
Exactly, and Jerry Remy from the Red Sox is a great example, a guy with lung cancer now. But I want to go back to movies, though. I'm sort of surprised at how much of a flag you want to wave here, because obviously you're a very subtle appreciator of movies and of nuance. So I'm going to pick another thing we tend not to agree about very much, and that's Wes Anderson movies. So people,
I knew this was coming.
Well, people smoke a lot.
You don't like his animated movies.
People smoke a lot in Wes Anderson movies, and they smoke a lot on the set. Apparently, Angelica Houston has said that she likes to work on Wes Anderson movies because she usually has quit smoking, and then she goes on the set, and everybody's smoking, whether they're on camera or off, and so she.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've met a lot of actors, and I've met a lot of directors. And a lot of them smoke.
Yep.
And maybe it's because many of them are borderline schizophrenic, and we know that smoking does help schizophrenics. If you go to Silver Hill or the Institute of Living, you're going to find, 98% of the patients will go outside to smoke, which is not to say that all smokers are schizophrenics. But artists live, on the line. They put themselves on the line. And I understand... it is energizing and it is mellowing at the same time. And I could understand how, I guess I'm like you, I feel very lucky. I think I would have been dead now had I taken it up, because I could just imagine myself drinking coffee and smoking and leaning over a typewriter. And I'm very, very lucky that I did not pick up that addiction. But no, I
can't.
Can
I go back to Wes Anderson?
Yeah.
So in Wes Anderson movies,
sorry.
Smoking is equated with depression, right? The characters who are depressed smoke. Gwyneth Paltrow in Royal Tenenbaums, Bill Murray in Rushmore. I could go on and on. And there's, in Rushmore, Bill Murray sometimes is smoking two cigarettes at once or diving off a diving board with a lit cigarette in his mouth. And he's clearly this incredibly depressed person. I mean,
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
Look at them. Bill Murray is the epitome of hipness, whatever role he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Gwyneth Paltrow, at least at the time, was not a joke. Although I don't think Goopy Paltrow would let real tobacco enter her system, unless it was, very specially farmed, mm-hmm. and cost, a great deal of money. But you're talking about very glamorous actors, and the characters in Wes Anderson's movies, I think a lot of people see those movies and want to be those guys. I mean, you're in college, you're on a college newspaper, you're in a play, you're sitting around in some, you're sitting around philosophizing, like T.S. Eliot wrote Proof Rock, when he was in college. That is exactly your market for hooking people onto these cancer sticks.
I want to add Richard Klein to this conversation. I've been hearing him make a few noises there in the background. Again, the author of Cigarettes Are Sublime. I'm assuming that, given the title of your book and the content of your book, you're probably not 100% in the David Edelstein camp about this topic.
Not entirely, not 100%. I'm just curious, in your case, do you drink alcohol?
Who, me?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Do you eat meat?
I do.
You do. Well, Hitler neither drank nor smoked nor eat meat. Donald Trump neither smokes nor, I guess he eats meat, thank God, but he doesn't smoke and he doesn't drink alcohol.
Well, I think that's a kind of Gandhi didn't smoke either. He's a pretty cool guy. So, who cares whether I'm not impressed by that particular argument. I mean, by that argument, we should lock up everybody in the wallpaper business because they're on paper. So, I don't think that's particularly.
Can I just say one thing in the defense of that? Actually, I mean, as someone who has struggled with alcohol in my life, which is no secret, alcohol is a poison. It's a toxin. It also can be managed and can lubricate social intercourse. And as in fact, can be a very healthy thing. It can also be a very deadly and a horrible thing. I I would definitely say that, you know, you don't have a G or a PG rated movie in which people drink alcohol. But if you're going to present, you know, someone having a glass of wine in a dinner scene, you know, you put that again, you put a warning, alcohol consumed. And you do it, but I realize it's a slippery slope. This is not an easy question.
Dumbo.
So I understand the point.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say the decline in smoking has improved American health. 45%. There's been a decline in death rates from lung cancer, 45% from 1990 to 2015. My question is, will anything be lost if we lose cigarettes? You don't seem to think so, David Ilstein. Let me just name some of the benefits of cigarettes, which seem to have been neglected. In the first place, cigarettes are a great consolation for many people in times of loss. Cigarettes kill time since the 19th century. They've been used as a way of killing boredom, waiting. That's why journalists smoke so much. It calms hunger. That's why women smoke. It helps keeping weight down. It's contradictory, as you said, David. It promotes concentration. That's why lots of writers smoke, but it also promotes relaxation. It's a great source of relief and release, particularly in times of stress. In times of stress and anxiety, nicotine and cigarettes are a great tool. Nicotine has the curious physiological power. On one hand, when you're anxious, you take a puff of a cigarette and it immediately increases the anxiety. It raises your pulse and your blood pressure, but it focuses the anxiety on the source of it, which is the tobacco. But nicotine has this amazing power in a second time to reduce your pulse and your blood pressure, which produces an effect of relaxation. That's why General Pershing wrote to the War Department, send us tobacco. We need tobacco more than we need food, because tobacco is what you use when you're confronting situations of great stress.
I feel like we're getting a little off the rails. You know, Mr. Klein, I feel like we're getting a little off the rails here. I mean, first of all, I don't think you can really construct much of an argument for cigarettes having a net positive effect on much of anything. But, I mean, I wasn't really here to host a debate about that. To me, it's just much more interesting, you know, what it means when it's depicted in movies and television.
Try and say that? Because
okay.
I want to start with the benefits of cigarettes, but I'm not really so interested in the benefits. I'm really interested in the beauty of cigarettes. That's what's being lost. The beauty of cigarettes has been praised, you know, since the 19th century in poetry and in movies. People celebrate this little sacrifice that you perform, you know, where you're manipulating fire, and at the end of your hand. Sartre says that when you smoke a cigarette before a beautiful landscape or when you see a beautiful spectacle, you're performing a kind of little sacrifice in which you're symbolically appropriating what you see. For many people, the beauty, the particular beauty of cigarettes is a negative beauty. It tastes bad. As a matter of fact, your next guest, who has written that amazing article about vaping in The New Yorker, writes, "I like cigarettes because they were gross and terrible for me, a way of confronting everyday stresses in a manner that seems suitably destructive and illogical." And that's precisely the point. The sublime pleasure of cigarettes, the sublimity in this case, refers to the particular kind of aesthetic pleasure which always has a negative moment, a kind of intimation of mortality. Kant, for example, or Burke talks about walking in the Alps and suddenly seeing an abyss open up in front of you. If you don't fall into the abyss, in a second moment, you have this feeling of pleasure, of intense, what Kant calls sublime pleasure at the prospect of mortality. It's precisely because cigarettes taste bad, because they are bad, that they're good.
Colin, can I interject here?
Yeah, I'd love to hear an interjection.
You know what? This is going to sound incredibly patronizing, and it's not. I'm being so transported by what you're saying right now. I'm ready to light up a cigarette myself. It's beautiful. And you know what? If drugs weren't fantastic. You know, on some level, they wouldn't be popular. I know people, I've never done heroin, but I know people who say that, you know, you use it and you see the world the way you want it to be. Many people have, Aldous Huxley has written some beautiful prose while, you know, mescaline was tickling through his cortex. I understand everything you're saying, and I'm not going to, and this isn't going to be a discussion about banning tobacco. In the case of movies, I'm less interested in, you know, I would like to see R ratings when it was simply when it was depicted in film, because it has a profound influence on just those sorts of people who don't savor a cigarette while gazing at the landscape. We're talking about, you know, 12-year-olds. We're talking about adolescents who get cooked at a very early age because, you know, and this has been directly, there was a direct correlation, between, you know, seeing it in positively depicted on screen and picking up the habit. You want to kill yourself when you're 20 years old or 21 years old. You want to, maybe you think that the loss of a few years is worth it. A small price to pay for beauty, small price to pay for sublimity. By all means, go ahead. Don't smoke it near me. But by all means, go ahead. But what I'm really concerned about is this positive depiction in film.
I'm going to quickly, we're going to take a break here, and we'll come back. We'll have more of this conversation. We're talking about what it means and how smoking is used symbolically in movies.
I smoke a lot. I'm not talking weed.
You, sir.
Are you all right, sir?
Fine. How have you been?
Fine, sir.
Good.
It's a good thing you were wearing that helmet.
Yeah.
What should we do now, sir?
Well, are we stopped?
We're stopped, sir.
Good. Well, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Very good, sir.
Smoke if you got 'em.
All right, that's from Spaceballs. So we're talking about something that has intrigued me for a very long time, and it's what it means, how smoking is used in movies to develop character. With me right now is David Edelstein, America's greatest living film critic for both New York Magazine, also Fresh Air here on WNPR, CBS Sunday Morning. So, David, I still feel like I'm not having the conversation I want to have, but maybe that conversation is impossible. I mean, do you, as somebody who's watching a movie, let's set aside the question of, let's stipulate, all right, people smoke, it should be R-rated. When you're watching a movie, and I'll give you some examples, Kirsten Dunst in Virgin Suicides. All my examples are going to be women for some reason right now, but Kirsten Dunst in Virgin Suicides, Scarlett Johansson in Lost in Translation, Anne Hathaway in Rachel Getting Married. You know, these are characterizations where I would argue that the person smoking is smoking for a specific reason that's meant to say something about the character. I mean, do you as a critic kind of, are you intrigued by
sure.
that idea? Yeah.
Sure. It's shorthand. It suggests a kind of detachment from the world. You are removing yourself from the world. And you are doing so in a way that is not, you're not dulling your faculties the way you do with alcohol or with marijuana in certain films, but you are, supposedly you are increasing your alertness. So it is a kind of artistic state that you are invoking. It may be born of depression, but depression on film, when it's embodied by Bill Murray or Gwyneth Paltrow, is a very, very glamorous state. It's an enlightened state. I'm not, you know, if it weren't so seductive, I wouldn't be so upset by it. It's enormously seductive. You can understand why generation after generation would see these things and would imitate them. And maybe even convince themselves that they were feeling what those characters feel. Yes, of course. I know exactly what you're saying. I could not agree more.
Yeah, I just find it. I mean, for example, I don't watch as much television as you watch movies. But in the series The Killing, Murray Ennis, who, in addition to being a very interesting actor, is also a Mormon. I always wonder how, if you're a Mormon and you have to smoke as your character, how you deal with that. But she plays a police detective who is, among other, struggling with a million inner demons. But one of them is that she's tried to quit smoking. She's constantly cracking and snapping Nicorette-type gum. But over the course of the series, she drifts back into smoking. And as you watch that happen, without, you know, it necessarily having to be spelled out in some heavy-handed way, you realize that this is meaningful in a bunch of other – there's just ways in which she's sort of letting a whole bunch of carefully constructed good habits fall apart.
Characters who are trying to – who need help in terms of regulating their emotions, it's fascinating from, you know, dramatically to create a character – I mean, in House – you know, the surgeon, the Sherlock Holmes surgeon is fighting an addiction, a painkiller addiction. In Sherlock Holmes, in the Sherlock Holmes stories, he's a cocaine addict. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always fascinating to watch characters struggle with, you know, especially very high strung characters who are having trouble managing their lives, either, you know, for internal reasons or because circumstances are so horrific. That's drama. That's internal drama. And that's fascinating to see. And it gives an actor, you know, wonderful stuff to play. Wonderful stuff to play. I mean, if a character divided against him or herself, there's nothing you would rather see than that. I mean, God knows, you know, probably the ultimate Hamlet will be a smoker. You know, arguing, sitting there, to be or not to be. You know, I'll smoke some more of this and I won't be. You know, that would be... That would be a very interesting Hamlet, and I might be open to it from one perspective.
Yeah, although, you know, that's a thing that happens these days too. And once again, I couldn't have grown up as a more radical anti-smoker, and I still think it's disgusting and I hate it. But I've been in theaters recently where a character on stage smokes, and people in the audience act like they've been tear gassed. I mean, they're like, you know, 40, 50, 60 feet away from this person. And suddenly there's just like coughing, you know, like somebody is smoking in my presence. And once again, I'm looking at it. I saw a Romeo and Juliet where Lady Capulet smoked. It was, you know, it was amped up into a different time frame. And there were these people just, you know, in the audience, like they'd just been attacked. And I'm thinking, really, it can't be bothering you that much.
Well, you know, secondhand smoke.
I get it.
It's yeah. But you know what? I see people feel the same way when they put that ridiculous smoke on stage. You know that
right.
That you know is meant to simulate fog. All of a sudden, the coughing begins even before it reaches the audience.
So let's kind of split movies up for a second between post Surgeon General's Report and pre Surgeon General's Report. So pre Surgeon General's Report. I mean, that's an artificial demarcation, but we got to have something. So as we suggested earlier, this was just. I mean, it wasn't any kind of character trait to smoke in a movie because pretty much, you know, I mean, just huge numbers of characters smoked in a movie. It didn't really seem to mean anything. But it also did. I mean, if you have, you know, 500 people who are all playing baseball, it's going to turn out that three or four of them are really good at it. And I think it could be argued as you watch some of these movies, you probably even know this quote from Roger Ebert where he's talking about the movie Out of the Past, and he says, there were guns in Out of the Past, but the real hostility came when Robert Mitchum and Kirk Douglas smoked at each other. There were people like Belmondo and Davis, and you mentioned Bogart, who really were able to do something, right, with this habit that wasn't even that unusual, a habit at the time.
Well, it's a really good tool for actors. For one thing, even before the method, even before Stanislavski, you know, the idea was to find a way to be present, to be all there. And there's nothing better than handling a prop is a way of putting everything in the present tense. Mm-hmm. When you smoke, you're not faking smoking, you know. Well, I guess you could be faking smoking, but that's a real thing you're doing. That gives you something to concentrate on in a scene. In some ways, because it focuses your concentration in a way. It gives, it also gives you a rhythm. There's something wonderful about, you know, the rhythm of smoking, the rhythm of taking a puff, thinking, saying a line, taking another puff. It makes thinking active. You know, any device that an actor can use on screen to make thinking not a passive state, but an active state, you know, you seize on. And that's what these actors did. That's what they were specialists in.
Right. It was symbolic.
Belmondo, all these people.
It was really symbolic of thinking in particular. There's a political commercial that was done during the Johnson-Goldwater race. I think it ran maybe once, if at all. It's like this really long commercial. It's 4 or 5 minutes long. And it's just a guy sitting there talking to the camera, a guy in a suit, white guy in a suit. And he's talking about how he's basically a Republican, but Goldwater really scares him. And he's talking about this in this very kind of open-ended, kind of meditative way. And about halfway through this political commercial, he takes out a pack of cigarettes and lights up a cigarette and pauses and talks some more. And when I teach that commercial in media classes, I say, at that moment, you know, in 1964, smoking somehow or other meant thinking. That's why they're having him do that, the directors of that commercial, right? That smoking...
Thinking and establishing intimacy.
Right.
Establishing intimacy, because it does create, if two characters are smoking or if someone who's talking to you is smoking, it is also a way of establishing intimacy.
You know, so let's go post-Surgeon General's report for a second. You know, there are a lot of ways in which I look at this, and I wonder whether it's – and I'll give you an example. This is might be an interesting one to debate. At the beginning of Manhattan, you see Woody Allen and his friends, and they're out to dinner, and Woody Allen's character is smoking. I think it might be the only time you've ever seen Woody Allen smoke in a movie, but he insists on getting a cigarette from somebody after the meal, and he kind of talks about how sexy it makes him look. He isn't really a smoker, but he just thinks he looks so sexy when he's smoking, and he's – smoking, and he's obviously not looking sexy, not one bit. And then, of course, later on, we find other reasons why we might not trust the judgment of this person at all. And I sort of wonder, as I look back at that movie, and obviously people will be debating that movie and the Mariel Hemingway stuff and the stuff that came after in his real life forever, I sort of wonder, because Woody Allen doesn't smoke, right? So I'm thinking, I wonder about that scene, whether he used the smoking as a way of saying, yeah, this guy isn't really exactly me, and I don't entirely, you know, endorse the way that he behaves.
He definitely was using that as a dramatic tool. Mm. And you can use smoking. I mean, I guess I'm not as averse when you use smoking in a sort of a negative way or, you know, to suggest insecurity, to suggest wanting to project cool as opposed to being cool. Mm-hmm. I had an interesting experience where about 20, 25 years ago, I wrote a profile of the late Saturday Night Live comedian Jan Hooks, whom mm-hmm. I adored. She was a chain smoker.
Yep.
She was a three-pack-a-day, shaky-hand, nicotine-stained chain smoker. But I wrote the piece for the late magazine Mirabella. And
an excellent Grace, magazine.
It was, yes. You wrote for it yourself. And, you know, Grace Mirabella, her husband was a leading cancer researcher.
Mm-hmm.
And the rule was you could not mention cigarettes. And I felt... because I put it in that she, you know, chain smoked throughout our entire interview, through our two interviews. And I felt that I was being robbed as a writer of a way of characterizing her. And I was very resentful. And I fought it. And eventually I was able to get it in, you know, jitteringly, pathetically, chain smoke, you know, mm-hmm. sticking one cancer stick after another into a face. I don't know. I had to characterize it in some, you know, somewhat negative way in order to get it in. And under, you know, under protest, Grace was not happy at all. So I do sympathize with this. I kind of wish that there were other ways. Maybe it's a lack of imagination that there are not other ways for an artist, for a writer, for a director, for an actor to show the same things. Sometimes actors complain about it. There's a very famous case in Avatar of Sigourney Weaver,
right.
You know, coming out of her atmosphere control, coming out of hyper sleep or whatever it is, and asking for a cigarette, and she smokes for 5 minutes on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not, she actually, the actress didn't want to do that. She tried to persuade James Cameron to let her character do something else. She even suggested an inhaler, which would be more appropriate if you're in a, you know, atmosphere-controlled base facility. But you know, he wanted that as a way, as a shorthand of characterizing her. It was effective, but he could have come up with something else. It was also a little cheap.
Yeah, no, but I think that in that characterization, there is this kind of Thanatos urge being played out, right? That's what's kind of hanging over that character, and that's why that character in that movie smokes. Yes? No?
So you're saying it's a good way of showing a death instinct,
yeah,
in, you know, in a character?
Yes, I do. And I think it's done that way a lot. Go back to Kirsten Dunst in Virgin Suicides, but I could come up with a...
Sure, but what Virgin Suicides was rated... Again, I'm getting back to the rating thing. Virgin Suicides was rated R. Avatar was rated PG-13. Lots of kids saw it.
Yeah.
I wish there had been another way for that point to have been made. And I think there, I mean, I'm not James Cameron. Far be it from me to tell him what to do. But I would like to see filmmakers start to be a little bit more resourceful, at least when they're doing PG-13 films.
It's interesting, too, speaking of James Cameron, that, you know, as the Terminator movies go on, I think it's in Terminator 2, Linda Hamilton starts smoking. And I think it's, once again, the suggestion there is that she's sort of at wit's end. She realizes now that she's probably just this kind of intermediary prop to get her son into position to do battle with our cybernetic enemies of the future and stuff like that. But, you know, when you watch it, it's kind of interesting. She doesn't smoke in the first movie. She smokes in the second movie. And there's that, I think, that implication, again, of Thanatos, that, you know, that she's kind of embracing death for herself anyway.
Well, I'm often at wit's end, and I don't see any way to go, and I think the world is about to end, and I don't pick up a cigarette, and I'm sure if I were an actor, I might, a resourceful actor, I might find another way of showing that, or else I might show a big bottle of bourbon at my side, chugging it, which is another way in which filmmakers have shown characters in the same situation. I think she needed her warrior instincts about her.
Yeah, you can't fight robots when you're drunk.
Probably was not a drinker.
Yeah. All right.
But I understand. I know you're a little bit. I know we started off with this R-rated PG-13 thing, and I hope we've segued into something a little more appreciative and analytical about what smoking means from a dramatic standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been, as it always is, a pleasure to talk to my friend David
Thank
Eppelstein,
you.
America's greatest living film critic. We have to break away now. We're going to come back. We're going to have a conversation. Well, we have to just, like everybody else, like the rest of the human race, apparently, we have to segue into vaping.
Two cigarettes in an ashtray. My love and I in a small cafe. Then a stranger came along.
There's no smoking in this building, Miss Trammell.
What are you gonna do? Charge me with smoking?
That's Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct. That's another thing that smoking has typically been used to signal in movies, particularly, once again, I would argue with women characters, is danger, right? Danger, somebody who's going to be disruptive. I'm thinking also of Christina Ricci in The Opposite of Sex, lots of instances of that. All right, we've come to the part of the show where typically Kyahn Wolf is here to say thank you to people. She's not, so I will say the thank yous. This show was produced by Jonathan McPants. Betsy Kaplan is running the board where Kyahn Wolf usually is. I'm looking around to see who else I have to thank. I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head, but part of Bill Curry was played by Liv Tyler. Can I just say that, although I really, as I've said a couple of times in this course of this show, although I've never smoked even one cigarette in my life, I do enjoy watching certain actors use smoking as a character tool. In the case of Liv Tyler, I saw her smoke in so many different roles that when she played an elf in Lord of the Rings, it really bothered me because I kept thinking, you know, she probably wants to have a cigarette, but she's an elf. All right. Anyway, tomorrow we'll be doing The Nose. We'll be down in New Haven to do that with one of our New Haven panels. We're certainly planning to talk about Donald Glover and the new video, This Is America, which has, I kind of almost introduced a new vocabulary into talking about a lot of issues that we've been struggling with for quite a long time. I don't know what else we're going to talk about. We'll figure that out. Joining us right now, we're so excited to have, joining us via Skype, I believe, Gia Tolentino, staff writer for The New Yorker. Her story, The Vapors, appears in the May 14th issue. She joins us by Skype. I should also say that in addition to never having smoked, I have never vaped. I will probably never do either one of those things. Although I was interested to watch two consecutively or simultaneously filmed Dave Chappelle specials recently. And Dave Chappelle is just an unapologetic, unreconstructible smoker, but he vapes in one of them and he smokes in the other one. And I think they were recorded within months of one another. So something's going on right now. So Gia Tolentino, first of all, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the kind of pop culture symbolic part of this phenomenon. Vaping is so new. Has it acquired some kind of, I don't know, understandable symbolic vocabulary? If we see somebody vaping in a cultural context, do we know what that means?
Yeah, well, so vaping, as I wrote in this piece, like cigarettes, you know, they're traditionally, they like symbolize rebellion and cool and, you know, whatever. Vaping is funny. Like vaping, the word is funny. It looks ridiculous, especially like early vapes. Vape's been around for about a decade. The early ones, you know, they looked like kind of like big boxes that would just blow, that would create these huge obnoxious clouds of vapor. And people looked like these sort of steampunk looking, you know, it looks ridiculous. Our celebrity iconography for them is like always already funny. You know, like there are a couple of like iconic shots of like a kind of bloated looking Ben Affleck vaping in his car. It's like people, people looking like there's a lot of like Leonardo DiCaprio vaping at award shows. Like recently there was a judge in New York who was vaping on the bench during a murder trial. Like, it's funny. And so it, and I have a lot of friends, adult friends who are, you know, smokers who have recently switched. I mean, people really are switching to this Juul in particular, because I mean, it's a good satisfying product. It's working for switching where almost nothing has before, but for teens, it's a completely different, you know, teens being the part of the American population that is vaping without ever having smoked before, which is not what these companies necessarily want. It's really bad for their image, but for better or worse, like all these teens are vaping. And for them, it's like this performative, ironic, like kind of manic social media thing.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about that, but just to back up for 2 seconds, you know, I was you might not have been able to hear it, but I was talking to David Edelstein before, and he was talking about the Sigourney Weaver character in Avatar, and I found myself thinking, no little kid is going to be watching Avatar and say, oh, I want to smoke like that old lady. I mean, I don't think that would be necessarily an influence for a young person, but yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, I think that these, to me, the reason why kids have started vaping is because they have inherited the sort of kind of lingering cultural idea that it's cool to do something that's like smoking. You know, like it's cool to have something to do with your hands at a party. It's cool to have a reason to leave and do something outside with like one other person. It's cool to have a reason to approach somebody and like put your mouth on something. Like there's it's cool to have this like oral fixation, this like stupid little tick. They kind of have this like lingering kind of subconscious, I would guess, idea that smoking, something like a smoking ritual, is cool. However, the anti-tobacco campaign has been very successful with, I mean, I grew up knowing cigarettes were horrible for you. I still smoked a little bit. These kids, I mean, nobody smokes cigarettes at high school parties anymore. Like in college, like smoking is way down, even among like, you know, heavy drinkers, like a lot of it is vaping now. So they, I think, kind of think it, something about it, you know, is some sort of cool, but cigarettes themselves as objects they see as like, you know, toxic and disgusting and for old people.
Right. I've never won an argument with David Edelstein in my life, and we've had a lot of them, so I didn't even try this. But I do feel as though, well, for example, in the series The Leftovers, which was, you know, in many ways a massive meditation on smoking, I think in the final episode or close to it, the character played by Carrie Coon, Nora, says something. I guess it's Amy Brenneman says, you know, to her, you know, smoking is really, really bad for you. And Nora says, I know. That's what makes it so incredibly cool. I don't think she says incredibly either, but and I mean, that's the problem, right? The more that you try to call attention to anything's toxic qualities, whether it's tobacco or vaping, to the dangers of it, you can't ultimately prohibit it any more than prohibition worked with alcohol.
Totally, and teenagers, I mean, people. I mean, I still fall into this to a large degree. I mean, teenagers feel like they're immortal. They feel like they're going to live forever. They like things that challenge that. I mean, I definitely did. And I, you know, still do plenty of things that, you know, like people don't operate on logical principles when it comes to substances.
Right. I am probably going to consume some bourbon at some point.
Yeah,
today.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I had an extra glass of wine last night that, you know, like wasn't necessarily sensible for a Wednesday. Like, but, you know.
But I would argue that, and I know less about this than you do, that vaping kind of hasn't found its place culturally, and not only just behaviorally in the stuff that you're talking about. And one of the things you do talk about, and I went and looked at them, are these teenagers who make these videos where they just sort of mess around with vaping and see how many huge clouds of steam or whatever it is that they can possibly blow out and stuff like that. But I feel as though even within our understanding in the culture, I think vaping is too young for the culture to know what it means.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
It's barely appeared in movies. It appears, like I said, I mean, it's funny. So when it appears, it will mostly be a joke. Like it will be a commentary on somebody being like a ridiculous character. The thing is that teenagers are minting this sort of iconography at a horizontal level for and by each other. Mm-hmm. So it is, I think there is a pretty well-established paradigm for what vaping is, but it is, because it exists mostly on social media, which is kind of necessarily hyper-targeted. So adults don't know about it and it doesn't breach their like sphere of attention at all.
Right. I would call your attention to the most recent season of True Detective, where after...
Oh, yeah, just a Rachel McAdams vape or something.
You know, well, yeah, we can't actually say the quote on the air, but she's vaping. Colin Farrell is watching her do that. They're in a car together, and he asks her a couple of questions about it. And then he said, I could never get past the idea that I was filleting a robot. That's
right.
Not exactly how he puts it, but that's what he means. And
right.
But by the end of the series, they're all smoking cigarettes because they think they're going to die.
Right.
And I watched that progression and I thought there's some kind of iconography there, right? That, you know, vaping is the thing you're doing when you're trying to do something that's dangerous, but do it safely and maybe deluding yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think vaping I think like there are clear reasons to be, you know, worried about young people picking this up before they've ever, I mean, cause they are giving, a lot of them will give themselves nicotine addictions, mm-hmm. but because nicotine has been associated with cigarettes, like so inextricably and for so long. I mean, I think it's something like 40% of smokers think that nicotine causes cancer. You know, it does not at all. Mm-hmm. Like nicotine is not a carcinogenic substance. So, you know, people are deluding themselves that it's harmless, but it is a lot less harmful than smoking, like meaningfully so. And there are like significant health benefits to switching from off cigarettes at any age. It's like never too late to quit, which is what people always say. So, you know, it's not harmless, but...
In your piece, you point to a study by a Georgetown oncology professor, which concluded that 6.6 million lives would be saved if we switched 10% of American smokers to e-cigarettes every year for the next 10 years. That's
there's something about smoking. I mean, also, like, people, it's really just, you know, wealthy and well-educated people are barely smoke now, you know, but people, like, it's in a lot of ways, smoking has just gotten more segregated. You know, like there are communities in which a lot of, like, I think in some communities, people sort of forget that smoking is still incredibly prevalent, you know, and the death toll, like, yeah, that, I think maybe the same doctor, you know, it's like 130,000 people die or whatever he said, like 1,300 people die every day or something. It was like three jumbo jets crashing every single day with zero survivors, and that's the death toll from smoking.
All right, Gia Tolentino, we have to stop it here. It's fascinating stuff. Staff writer for The New Yorker. Her story, The Vapors, appears in the May 14th issue. She is joining us, or has joined us, via Skype. This was an interesting show. There were times at which it wasn't the show that I was imagining I was going to do, but it was an interesting show. I would like to conclude by saying, don't smoke. If you're smoking now, stop smoking. It's bad for you. Please don't conclude from anything that was said on this show that there's any other way to think about smoking.
Just like this cigarette, our time is running down. Only 1 hour till you're leaving this town. Smoked one last cigarette, sat in bed for a while. Thought of your face and that brought me a smile.